is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
It's Friday, September 27, 2019. This is the Baseball Tonight podcast. I'm Buster Olney. Our producer back in Bristol is Troy Farkas. And Troy, just one question for you today. Are you a crier? Like, are you someone who's going to cry? You go to a movie, that sort of thing.
Typically, no. The only time I cry are in, like, really emotional moments in real life, especially during sporting events. So I don't know where, what you're getting at here, but.
Well, I think you got a pretty good idea where we're going, because there was a lot of crying in baseball on Thursday in Seattle, the Mariners and the Athletics. And, of course, for Oakland, it's an important game because they are going for a wild card spot. And in the top of the second inning, in Felix Hernandez's last start in Seattle, Matt Chapman helped to give Oakland a big lead.
Right-handed pitcher, right-handed hitter. It's on the way. And here it is, a fly ball hit the deep right center field. Smith going back, center fielder at the track, to the wall, leaping at the wall, and it's gone. And Chapman has done it again. He's homered in back-to-back games, and the Athletics take a 3-0 lead.
Ken Korak, 860 AM, the answer. So the competitive part of this game was kind of over early, and everyone was there to see Felix Hernandez and how he would handle his final game for the Mariners and what the response would be. There were so many fans there just to see Felix. This is what it sounded like when Felix Hernandez came out of the game.
Here comes Scott.
Here comes Scott, and this is going to be it. He's going to take his final bow right now.
Everybody rising to their feet. Scott Servais hearing it from the fans. Felix has thrown 106 pitches. And ladies and gentlemen, we are witnessing the culmination of a magnificent Mariners career for Felix Hernandez as he shakes hands with Scott Servais. They look each other in the eye. The whole infield is gathered around.
They hug
each other. Kyle Seager hugs Felix. A long embrace with Kyle Seager. And big slap with low five with Omar Narvaez, and now Felix takes his cap off. Big roar. Listen to this crowd.
What a moment. Dave Sims calling on 710 ESPN Seattle. And yeah, Troy, look, he gave all those hugs out on the mound. Then he hugged each one of his teammates. He got an encore call out, waved to the fans, and Felix Hernandez was openly weeping. Like, he kept on trying to dab his eyes, but there was a river of tears there. It was really cool. What'd you think of it? Because I know I was getting emotional watching it.
I know. I actually did, too. So, I mean, the Mariners mean something special to me. I was born in Seattle. My brother, who we heard on the pod earlier this week, he's a Mariners fan. He loves Felix, and he was texting me last night just about how emotional it was, and I saw the video this morning, and knowing how much he means to me and where I'm from, I got a little emotional watching it, even though it was at like 4:30 this morning.
It was really cool. Here was Felix Hernandez after the game about how emotional the day was.
I was thinking about that yesterday when I was in my bed. I was like, please don't cry. And I was walking through the bullpen. I was like, my eyes were watered down. I said, please, not right now. Not right now. But it's hard to do it, you know. It's a lot of emotions out there. I mean, I've been here for 15 years, and it's a lot of stuff going on.
And we're going to be talking more about Felix Hernandez and his emotional night and what might be ahead. He was asked the question if he wants to continue to pitch.
I don't know what's going to happen next year. I don't know what they're trying to do or what they're going to do, but we'll see.
At the end of the night, after Oakland won 3-1, their magic number to clinch a playoff spot now down to 1, in part because of what happened in Chicago earlier in the evening. The White Sox facing the Indians in the final game of that series. Basically a must-win situation for Cleveland, but it didn't go well.
Now the 1-1 of McCann, drilled into deep left field. Allen will turn and look. It's a 3-run homer for James McCann, and the White Sox take a 3-0 lead in the fourth.
That on WGN, on the way to an 8-0 victory over Cleveland. Terry Francona, the Indians manager, talked about losing out on the division.
You guys were eliminated in the Central today. I mean, is that kind of inevitable?
I don't know about inevitable. I mean, I don't know if you look at things like that, but I mean, now the next best thing is we need to win tomorrow, keep this thing going.
Yeah, they are hanging right on the edge. The Twins beat the Tigers 10-4. Jonathan Schoop becoming one of the Twins who hit home runs this year.
As Schoop swings and skies one deep to left. This has some Kerry Dixon back on the track at the wall. That's gone, a home run. The Minnesota Twins become the first team in baseball history to hit 300 home runs.
Corey Probus calling that milestone on the Treasure Island Baseball Network. Now, typically, we wouldn't be playing the Rangers and Red Sox highlight, Troy, from yesterday, but there was a lot of back and forth in this game. Going into this outing, Mike Minor had 191 strikeouts, and in the middle of the game, the Rangers took the lead.
Danny hits this ball well, deep out to right.
So the competitive part of the game is over. That call from the Rangers television network. Mike Minor needed nine strikeouts for 200 in this game. He had eight through seven innings. And in the eighth inning, the Red Sox hitter swung at the first pitch in each of their three at-bats, put it in play, so he didn't get that number 200. In the top of the ninth inning, Mike Minor still trying to get to 200, and this is what happened.
And there's a swing and a pop-up, and that's playable on the right side of the infield. Guzman down the line, lets it drop in foul territory. Did that look like they intentionally let the ball drop?
Yes, that's exactly what it looked like, because Guzzi's going to catch that. Trevino could have caught it. Now you're at 1-2 to a guy who, with Boston, has struck out 21 times in 42 at-bats.
That from 105.3, the Fan. Mike Minor acknowledged after the game that he yelled at Guzman to let it drop. And this is what followed.
Well, there are two strikes now, and here's the 1-2 delivery. Struck him out looking on the inside corner. Chris Woodward's already out of the dugout to come get Mike Minor after his 200th strikeout of the year. 200 strikeouts, and the announcement is being made as the Ranger infield converges on the mound to congratulate Mike Minor. And Chris Woodward sends him on his way to a standing ovation, with the Rangers leading 7-5 in the ninth.
Now, the Red Sox weren't so happy as the fans and Chris Woodward were in that moment. After the game, the Rangers manager talked about how he felt about Minor asking a teammate to drop a pop-up.
What are you thinking right when it hits? I mean, what's kind of going through your mind there?
You better strike him out. That was what I was thinking. If you're going to do that, you better strike him out. And in fact, if he didn't strike him out, I probably would have taken him out just because of the way it looks. I don't like, you know, I talk about playing the game the right way all the time, and it's, you know, that's kind of borderline crossing the line. But he ended up striking him out, so it worked out.
Here was Alex Cora, the Red Sox manager, about that intentional drop of a foul ball.
Just happy our guys are playing the game the right way. We're playing hard till the end. You saw the effort, and that's what it's all about. You know, we had a goal set in mind. It didn't happen. It's been, you know, 2 weeks that we've been eliminated, but, you know, we've been going, you know, going at it the right way. And that's all I ask. You know, it does. I don't manage the Rangers, so that's a question for Woody over there, and he probably has the right answer.
The Dodgers still going for the number one record, the number one seed in baseball. They face the Padres, and Clayton Kershaw was terrific. Seven strikeouts over six scoreless innings, and got some backing from Max Muncy.
Muncy lines it into left center field, a base hit. Rounding second and heading for third is Taylor. Dino Ebel's going to wave him home. Here comes the relay from Urias. The slide, safe! Hedges dropped the ball, and the Dodgers lead it 1-0.
Tim Neverett, AM 570 LA Sports. The Angels face the Astros. The Astros, of course, starting the day with the number one seed in baseball. The two teams are tied in the bottom of the 12th inning. This is what happened.
Three cents and the pitch. He grounds the ball off the glove of the first baseman, Tucker. It'll roll into right field, and the ball game is over. The Angels have a walk-off win here in the bottom of the 12th inning. That was a shot. It kind of handcuffed Tucker, and the Angels come away with the win here tonight at the Big A. Angels win this ball game by the final score of 4-3 in 12 innings.
Terry Smith, Angels Radio, AMA 30. The Astros leading the Dodgers by one game in the race for the number one seed. The Nationals and the Phillies, Washington wins 6-3, and Steven Strasburg hit a big round number.
Boston both tomorrow. Patrick Corbin scheduled for Saturday's 4 o'clock game. Sunday at TBA. Nothing TBA about that strikeout. That's number 250 for Strasburg as he buzzes the inside edge on Hernandez Nissan PitchCast.
That was Bob Carpenter on Masson. We wouldn't normally play Marlins and Mets highlights at this point, but there was a nice moment for Curtis Granderson, who's been such a great pro.
Now Grandy gets into one. Deep right center, Conforto and Nimmo back, and this one is gone. Another home run. They've gone back to back. Heinemann and Granderson, and the Marlins storm back into the lead. It's 3-2 in the eighth.
Glenn Geffner, 940 WINZ for Granderson, career homer number 344. He's 38 years old, 16 years in the big leagues. He's been such a tremendous major leaguer.
Deep center field.
The game.
It's gone!
Of the day.
The game of the day between the Brewers and the Reds. And in the top of the fourth inning, the Brewers took control.
Here comes the 1-1, and that ball is flipped into shallow left, racing back is Van Meter. It's off the top of his glove and falls in the gap. One run is in. Spangenberg will score. Around third is Shaw. Here's the throw. It's cut off. And Orlando Arcia brings home three, and the Brewers lead it 3-1.
That's from 620 WTMJ. The Brewers will win this game 5-3, but the reason why it's a game of the day is not because the Brewers and their chase for the National League Central title. It's because it was the last game for broadcaster Marty Brenneman. After so many years being the Reds' play-by-play man, this was Marty Brenneman after the game talking about his career in Cincinnati.
To have lived in this city all the time that I have and to have made all the friends that I have and have been a hand in raising three kids through three marriages, and never ever lessen my love for this city in any aspect of it. And I'm proud to say that I'll be here until the day that they pass muster on me for the final time. I'm proud to say I'm a Cincinnatian. And for those who are here today and for those who are listening wherever they might be, just know how much you're loved and how much you're appreciated. That's all I got.
That from 700 WLW. Before we lead off with Carl Ravitch and talk more about Marty Brenneman and about what happened in Texas, we all know hiring can be a slow process. Cafe Altura CEO Dylan Miskowitz needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants, so he could focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. That's ZipRecruiter.com/B-U-S-T-E-R. ZipRecruiter.com/Buster. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
Carl Ravitch, of course, the host of Baseball Tonight, play-by-play man for ESPN and the Rabbit Train. This week, Carl has been all over the place. Where are you headed next?
Next stop is a special stop. Before we dive into the playoffs, of course, Saturday is the Kelly Kirchin wedding, which is taking on sort of epic proportions relative to a royal wedding. The way that this thing is unfolding and the number of people and Tim's anxiety over it and what a beautiful bride and couple they'll make. So we're going to head to D.C. for the weekend before we return to Bristol for our two-hour Baseball Tonight season finale at 6 o'clock Eastern time on ESPN, and then another hour at 7 on ESPN2 to kind of set the table for the playoff races. So that's the train is heading to D.C., although it's actually plane instead of a train this time.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that'll be an emotional day on Saturday at the Gartner wedding, and it was an emotional day yesterday in Cincinnati. Marty Brenneman, his last game as a Reds broadcaster. I listened to, you know, his post-game show and his remarks, and he was working his way through, Carl. Like, he was doing okay, and then he, you know, something would pop into his head, a thought, and his voice would start to break up, and the same thing was happening with Jeff Brantley. Really cool. You know, Marty Brenneman is not as well-known as Vin Scully, outside of the industry among fans, but boy, he was a one-of-a-kind broadcaster. I think with how direct he was, we talked to him about this last year, had a great interview with him. I always loved listening to Marty, and I always loved being around him. What were your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I love the way he did it. I love the idea that he was opinionated. He wasn't afraid, and that comes with experience, and having done it for as long as he's done it, you know, you get more and more comfortable, and he is as comfortable being, you know, Marty Brenneman as anyone is being themselves. And at 77, we saw him last week, and we saw him at Wrigley Field, and we asked him for a while what he's going to miss the most. And like most people, he's going to miss the people. He's going to miss being around the park. He doesn't necessarily feel like he's going to miss the game of baseball, the way it has changed over the years for him. It's a little different, obviously. A little different for all of us, but different for him. But look, his son is doing it. They tried. His son continues to say, why don't you just do 20 games? Come back and do 15 games. Whatever it might be, just sort of stay involved. And maybe, you know, maybe at some point he does do that. We saw Brantley. We saw the Cowboy. And, you know, there are unique aspects to Marty Brenneman which allow him to have the longevity he has. People like John Calipari reached out to him yesterday and said, I hope we get a chance to see you at Rupp Arena. Those guys, and I don't know how many more there are because of the way we consume baseball, but those guys that have done it on radio for so long, there is such a unique relationship between the listener and the play-by-play guy, and Marty established that, you know, through the Midwest and certainly in Cincinnati for so long, that you do become part of people's families. And that's where the sadness comes, and I think Marty will realize how impactful he was over the years. The one thing that strikes me, and I've done this half as long as Marty, is how people grow up with you. And people, think about the people that have grown up with Marty Brenneman, listening to him, hearing what he has to say, forming opinions. So he's one of a kind, and the kind that I like. I love the people that were comfortable enough to share opinions as opposed to be sort of coerced or driven by front offices, et cetera, et cetera. That's my favorite part of Marty.
I don't think Joey Votto will mind if I tell this story, but, you know, of course, he was critical of Votto at times during his career for not driving in more runs. And, you know, and Marty, he was always blunt on air when he talked about it. And we did that long podcast interview last year with Marty and explained his perspective. He felt like he represented the fans. He told the story about how in 1974, when he referred to the Reds as we, and Jack Billingham, the Reds pitcher, pulled him aside and said, hey, mate, what's this we stuff? So he understood his place in this. And after that interview ran on an ESPN radio on one random Saturday, I got a text message from Joey Votto. He said, I listened to that interview, and now I get it. And it was really cool to get that because, you know, Marty is such an institution out there, and I think people should understand him. And, you know, you make the point about how many are left. That group in San Francisco, oh, man, you know, their connection with their fans, I think, is very similar. Obviously, Vin Scully had that sort of rapport with Dodger fans. But that was really cool yesterday to see he had that moment. Last night in Seattle, Felix Hernandez also had a moment. And you could tell, Carl, he mentioned this after the game, like he was hoping, don't cry, don't cry. But by the time he walked off that mound, he was openly weeping.
The idea that baseball players make it a point not to cry when you get hit by a pitch, don't show it, wear it, run to first base. Hopefully we're moving past that. Lizardo said that he was in a bullpen and he actually teared up, and he's not one to tear up. We qualify everything with don't cry. I didn't mean to show the emotion. I don't want to see tears running down your face. And we've moved the needle a little bit on that. And I think it's so important to be able to show those types of emotions. Brenneman did it. Felix did it. It at least quantifies what you've been able to accomplish and how important this stuff is. If you're not upset or if you're not emotional, you're detached, you're distant. That's not how you play the game. That's not how you broadcast games for so long. You are part of that fabric. You're part of that community. They impacted you as much as you impacted them. You should be in tears. There should be emotion involved with it. The amazing part about Felix relative to Marty is one of them 77. The other guy is 33. That's the part about Felix that I think strikes me. You know, in a world in which people are living longer, when your contract is up and your career is changing, if not ending, at 33, and the impact you had for those years, it seems so young to be kind of tearing up and walking away from something. But Pedro Martinez, Felix Hernandez, when they were in their prime and when they were right, they were unhittable. And that's what I'll remember about the King.
And the fact that he bought into not only the Mariners, but Seattle. I remember once we did a SportsCenter slash Baseball Tonight thing on Felix. This was right in his prime. It must have been around 2009, 2010. And so I reached out to his representation. I was like, hey, I'd love to do this thing on Felix. And they said, well, he spends the whole offseason in Seattle, and he works out every day at the ballpark. Right? I mean, here's someone with the kind of money who could live anywhere in the world, but he wanted to live in Seattle, and that's where he's been. I suspect, based on what I've heard about him, that that's where he's going to be the rest of his life. That's something that you heard about those 1970s Orioles. It's not something you hear about players in this era, and I think that's part of the reason why he got such a response last night. I always remember the story when his contract, $175 million for 7 years, was announced. And you remember that story about all the Mariners employees meeting the elevator when Felix came down after signing that contract, and they're all giving the golf claps and the cheers, and they're all excited. And Felix was weeping then as a young man.
Yeah. Well, Buster, I mean, you know, the two things that I think about when you say that are people live in communities, and whether it's a great city like Seattle, or it's a Midwest town like Cleveland, or it's a big city like New York or L.A. or Chicago. They live in those towns, and they take a great deal of pride in those towns, in those cities. And when you as a ball player can show or, in a sense, justify to those people, like, I get what you get. I want to be where you live. You take great pride in it. I do. I think about David Ortiz and the speech he made, obviously, after that terrible marathon incident, and you know, he is now back in Boston. He went there after getting out of the hospital for more care. To me, he is associated with that city. He wore their emotions. Felix wore Seattle's emotions. Those types of connections run a lot deeper than the fact that he's thrown 419 games in Seattle. Way deeper, and will last way longer.
All right, baseball's book of unwritten rules just keeps on adding chapters, and I feel like after what we saw in the Red Sox and Rangers game yesterday, we need to add one with the entitled September, because this seems to fall in that category. As you know the story, Mike Minor started for the Rangers. His last outing of the year, he needed 9 strikeouts to reach 200 for the year, and he was endeavoring to get there, probably pitching deeper into the game than he normally would have. And in the top of the 8th inning, the Red Sox hitters swung at the first pitch in every at-bat, 3 pitches, 3 outs, and so he didn't have the opportunity to get that last strikeout that he needed for 200. And so in the 9th inning, their first baseman intentionally drops a foul pop at the behest of Minor, who was yelling at him. The Red Sox weren't happy about this. There was a lot of back and forth, I know, between the two teams. I talked with folks on both sides. Some bad feelings. I don't know. I get the fact that, and I've known Mike a long time, I get the fact that 200 is a nice round number, but it kind of reminds me of one of those NBA games where a guy's going for a triple-double and he's missing shots on purpose and getting rebounds and trying to jack up his numbers. How much does it mean if you have to sort of go gimmicky to get it?
Yeah, it's different. I think, was it Nikisha Sales, Gina Oramimo? Remember, he put her in.
Yes.
She had a bad injury, and she made a layup, and it got her 2 points to get to some milestone in her career. And that was a little different because there was a nod to the fact that she was hurt as opposed to something that she couldn't control. You know, in this case, a lot of times, and I these things are motivated by money. There are contract, there are incentives and things like that. Eduardo Perez brought this up a couple of weeks ago to us during one of our telecasts. And he sent the video to us yesterday on our phone saying, watch him. He's yelling at Guzman, drop it, drop it, drop it. He wanted to get to that number 200. I straddle the fence a little bit. It sounds like you do too here, to some extent. The game, because of the records, are meaningless. There's no playoffs here. Neither team is influencing the outcome of who gets in or a wild card or anything like that. But by the same token, and if we get into the Cubs and their lineup, there is an integrity thing. God forbid somebody got badly hurt on the next play. It's an odd one. I probably have, if I were leaning towards, do you have a problem with it or not? I'd probably put not having a problem with it at about 51% and 49% for having a problem with it. Because you could always say, look, dude, if you were so focused on 200, then you should have struck out more prior to getting to that point in that part of the season. Similarly, if you're going to worry about a Cub lineup, well, you should have won more games. It's not the Cubs' responsibility. It's really on you to win more games. I lean there, but it's an odd one. I agree. It's a weird one. If there was money involved, I'd be pissed. If this was going to get him X amount, I'd be pissed.
Yeah. And look, Woody, the Rangers manager, made the point that, once I saw the Red Sox were swinging at the first pitch in the eighth inning, didn't have the opportunity, I was going to give him that chance, and there was some stuff coming out of the Rangers. Well, they're not trying to win. You and I both know that there are a lot of days during the year, dating back to spring training, in a dugout, someone will say, you know what, boys, time to swing at the first pitch. We're getting out of Dodge.
Yeah.
And being aggressive.
When the rain is coming, they do that. Of course.
Yeah, that's not unusual. And your reference was to the fact that Joe Maddon has made it clear that this weekend when they face the Cardinals or in the National League Central race and trying to hold off the Brewers, he's not going to play his everyday lineup. He's going to rest guys. He's going to, the guys who have these nagging injuries, he's going to put them on the bench and he's going to pay his second team. And he basically said, I don't care what anybody thinks, Carl.
Yeah, and he used a different word than care. Again, this is where I'd fall back on. If I'm the Brewers, I get it, but the idea that the Cubs with their B lineup or Cole Hamels, who's sort of pitching for, to prove that he's healthy, this doesn't feel like they're not going to go out there and try. I think that would be unfair to suggest about Joe Maddon, his team, or the players that are on the field. But I fall back on, don't look at the Cubs to help you get into the postseason or beat the Cardinals. I can't do that. I eventually have to wake up and look in the mirror and say, if we had done better, if we had won more, and gosh, the Brewers have been out of their minds here, obviously. Not since Yelich got hurt, but the entire last month they've been playing out of their minds. But it's not on the Cubs to do it. You go and sweep, and let's see if the Cubs beat the Cardinals. I don't have a problem with the idea that Bryant is banged up and Baez is hurt. And you may see an opener in a Sunday game. You're pitching Hamels. You're going to put your guys out there. It feels representative of a team that actually is going to give a great effort. That's where I fall on the Cubs this weekend.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that. And it feels like in the middle of September every year we talk about, my God, chaos could emerge at the end of the year. We could have 50 play-in games and this series of events. And it always seems to clear up, and it really has this year. The American League wild card race is gaining clarity. It looks like Oakland and Tampa Bay, unless Cleveland makes a big comeback this weekend. And the last sort of unresolved bit of business is who's going to win the National League Central. Carl, yeah. I appreciate it. Have fun at the wedding.
That's exactly right. Thanks, Buster. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Speaking of long goodbyes, we had a great conversation the other day with Bruce Bochy, the outgoing Giants manager. It was a long interview, and so we had to chop it up a little bit. He told us great stories about his memorable umpire confrontations.
You know what? It was probably in L.A. It was a check swing by Belt. So it wasn't that big a deal. But, Mike Winters and I, we just don't see eye to eye. And it was just the attitude, I guess, that kind of started it. And I had to, it's at Dodger Stadium. That's a long ways for me to go, from that dugout over to third base. And so as I'm going over there, it's just building up and building up. And, I regret some things I probably said. I don't remember exactly what I said, but it's just like I had enough. It was something about his response and attitude that probably ticked me off as much as anything. Now, there was another umpire that got me the first time, but after that, I never paid attention to it, was Bob Davison. He would always bring my career into it. Well, you couldn't play anyway. I'd like that had anything to do with the bad call that he just made. So that, you know, I remember one time with him, that's as pissed as I've ever been.
Wow. He got personal with you, Boach.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Yeah. But, so I say those two. I was going to say, who? I'm drawing a blank here. I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'll think.
Oh, no, no. About the, you said the funniest about argument you had with an umpire, perhaps?
Yeah. I think it's Billy Williams. Anyway, he wouldn't throw me out.
And he you're said, kidding.
I don't care how long you're here. Yeah, he wouldn't throw me out. Finally, I said, well, this game, we're going to be here all day. He finally threw me out, but that, it was like we had a standoff there, and it lasted for about 5 minutes.
What was your most memorable mound visit? Like a conversation or some surreal thing that happened when you went out to the mound?
Well, you know, other guys have talked about it and used it in jokes, whatever, but it happened with Peavy, you know, and he gave up, you know, some home runs. He's trying to finish the game in Milwaukee, and he started giving up home runs and a couple. And we had a pretty good lead, but he wanted to finish the game. And so I went out there, and he says, you're not going to take me out. I'll finish this. I said, no, I'm not taking you out. I'm just giving what's-his-name time to get back up there and reload. And PB loves to tell that story.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Shambi on Baseball Tonight.
Boog Shambi, the legend, play-by-play man. And Boog, your name came up the other day because the other day you were in Chicago and Tom Hamilton was in Chicago. We were trying to guess how many window panes were left after both of you were making a call on a Jose Ramirez home run. What was that like?
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, I think the first one, it's in your head a tiny bit. You know, it'd be cool if he hit a grand slam, but then he hits the second one and he jumped all over it. We were both, I'm sure. I didn't get to hear Hammy's call, but it was cool.
I was imagining that the fans sitting right in front of the broadcast section probably heard a lot of they got an earful from the two of you calling that home run because it was that kind of a moment. And Tom came out of his seat to make his call, and he, like you, has that booming voice. All right, I'm going to ask you a question. I kind of like to piss you off a little bit, and so I'm going to ask you a sort of sports writer, bar talk type question that I could see annoying you. What I want you to do is rank in order of emotion these goodbyes. Give me a thought on the three of them. You got to rank them 1, 2, and 3, okay? Felix Hernandez, Marty Brenneman, and Bruce Bochy. Okay.
Wow. God. That's hard, man. I have a soft spot for... So, wow, rank them?
Yes! That's the annoying part.
Okay, so I'll do it this way. I'm gonna do Marty number one for me, and the reason is because Marty's not coming back, and it's probably of the three, not probably, it is the most personal for me because as a young broadcaster, he was someone who always, he looked out for the young guys, and he had just such a classic way of calling a game. He was a serial truth teller and just this larger than life personality. I just love the guy, and he's one of the best broadcasters that we've heard. And, you know, for Boach and Felix, with Felix, he made pitch again somewhere. It was emotional last night. I thought it was really cool how jam-packed that place was. That was a really neat sign of respect. The one note I saw on Felix that was pretty amazing was he was not he entered the league so young at 19 and all the success that he had. He was not league age average until his 10th season in the big leagues, which is pretty amazing. So I think that I still, though, would put Boch second because I have a little more of a personal connection there. But the reason that I put Marty one is because, you know, Boch can still manage. I mean, it's not whatever anybody wants to say. I think it is not out of the realm of possibility that Bruce Bochy could go manage the Phillies or the Padres or something along those lines.
Yeah, I think some team will call and say, hey, do you want to talk about this?
Some team probably already has.
Right, exactly.
That's my thought.
Right. Marty Brenneman is in the Hall of Fame. He's already been honored there. Bruce Bochy is going to be on at the Hall of Fame. Felix Hernandez, is he a Hall of Famer for you?
Man, I think it's a little short. It was certainly a Hall of Fame path. I mean, the beginning of his career was, I mean, you're talking about one of the best young pitchers we'd ever seen. He had a start to his career like Kershaw had to his career, but I think it's a little bit short. I have less intensity about who is and who isn't these days. I will tell you that.
Yeah, well, I do feel like the bar's been lowered to some degree. And let's face it, now you look at, well, if that guy's in, then this guy should be in. I'm looking after the events of the last year. I'm looking at Dwight Evans and Steve Garvey, players like that in a very different light, I got to tell you. And you're right.
An interesting way to put the Harold Baines election, the events of last year.
Well, I covered Harold, okay? I got a soft spot for Harold. I hate the fact that he's being injected into it the way that he has. All right. As we've talked about in the past, you've known Craig Counsell for a long time. He is going to be in the vortex of really perhaps the last remaining unresolved bit of business for the postseason this year. The National League Central still up in the air. The Brewers this weekend playing in Colorado, which is a challenge enough if you're a manager in terms of handling a pitching staff. But, Craig, this year the Brewers have averaged less than 5 innings per start in the games this season. All year, as you know, he's been piecing it together, patchwork, and I'm going to be really curious to see how hard he actually pushes for the division title, or if his focus will be, you know what, we need to just make sure we're ready for Tuesday. What's your sense of him and how he'll handle that?
I think, for example, tonight, my guess would be he's going to push really hard and see if they can get a win, and if maybe the Cardinals will lose and they're even, and then he'll have something to think about. But, they've had some good luck. He's really good at manipulating the bullpen. And, you know, of all the guys and teams, you know, with expanded rosters that utilizes it really well, you know, he'd be at the top of the list. But, you know, again, it only works when he's got his good guys, you know, pretty well rested. So that's the thing I think that, you know, you're talking about that is so crucial in terms of, you know, what you do and what you're ready for to play in a wild card game. You know, you got to make sure that your guys, you know, are rested and not beat up, because what realistically is the game. But as of right now, I think that they will push and they will go for it tonight, and he'll play it by ear from that point forward. But he's really good at manipulating and handling the bullpen. He just has a real knack for it.
So tell me what you've seen in him during this amazing run in the aftermath of Yelich's injury, because they're what, 18-2?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's enjoyed it, is what I would say. And I also think that he understood that in a short sample for as wonderful a player as Yelich is, that weird stuff can happen. He was truly bummed for Christian, because if you talk to Craig Counsell, I mean, he so enjoys getting an up-close seat at watching someone perform at the level that Christian Yelich has performed for the last 2 years. You know what I'm saying? Like, he will acknowledge to you that one of the things that's really cool about his job as managing the Brewers is that he gets to watch Christian Yelich hit all the time. And then I would just say that he kind of smiles, and it's funny that, you know, you get into this mode when you're a team, and it's like there's this mentality, jokingly, where it's like, wow, we're never going to lose again, huh? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, that's what starts to you start to feel, and so it just feels like everything is going your way, and they've had two of these stretches that have been kind of magical.
Yeah, Paul Imbakides sent us that great note earlier this week, and that from April through August of the last two seasons, their run differential is in the negatives, and their run differential in the month of September is over 100 plus.
It's crazy.
Positive. It's remarkable. Before you go, we got the postseason starting next week. I think it's clear the Astros are the number one seed, the team to beat going into it. Pick a team that you think has the best chance to unseat them.
There's nothing interesting or sexy to me for it. I think it's got to be the Yankees. In light of the Correa injury, it doesn't move the needle for me. I still would say that they're the best team. And again, baseball in 2019, the Astros are it because they strike people out as a pitching staff, and they don't strike out as hitters. Oh, but wait, they don't just hit the ball on the ground, and it's not just contact for nothing. They do damage. So, you know, they have found and, I would say, developed and trained a grouping that, you know, for all the talk, like, the Astros have the best offense, in my opinion, because of the combo of on-base slug with the best contact rate. You have the lowest strikeout rate, the highest contact rate, and then you also slug. I think it's going to be really difficult. But I think if there's a team that could do it, it would be the Yankees, because we know that they can be very explosive, and they have the arms down there that if Aaron Boone gets his group on a really good run, that bullpen can be dominant.
Yeah, and by the way, my dog in the background is having a nightmare, which is the sound you're hearing. Poor Ruby sleeping, and she's having a nightmare. Another thing that's different about the Astros for sure is that they're so balanced. Roops, Ruby, you can wake up, sweetie. It's okay. The Astros lineup is so much more balanced. Like when they won the World Series in 2017, as you remember, it was a very right-handed lineup. Now, with Brantley and Yordan Alvarez, that it's a very different looking team from the other dugout.
Now, one other thing I would say, too, that for both the Astros and the Dodgers, it doesn't get talked about enough, but I really think that we have to talk about teams when we talk about their pitching. We should start to think about it and talk about it almost in an NFL way, in a way, how do they prevent runs? Because I think in both cases, I know Verlander and Cole, but I still would say some of what we think is pitching is actually defense, and both the Astros and the Dodgers catch the ball really, really well. I'm not talking about fielding percentage catch the ball really well. I'm talking about go and make outs that other teams don't make. These are two elite defensive teams where they optimize for defense. They are really, really good defensively, and it's a big part of their success that I still don't think gets talked about, the defense of both the Astros and the Dodgers.
Boog, thanks for doing this. I will see you down the road.
See you later, Ruby.
Bleacher tweets.
Rena Wong is a crazy Twins fan who's known on Twitter as Rena Benina, and she helps us out with Friday tweets. Rena, how you doing this week? You getting fired up for the playoffs next week?
I'm doing great. Yeah, two nights ago was one of the greatest nights of my life. I'm really excited for the offseason, or rather the postseason. And I think it's great that they clinched a little bit earlier so I can go to bed early and really rest up and get things going. Yeah, going to bed early, like, though, isn't, 7 p.m., but.
Yeah, you're like a starting pitcher. You need to get all rested up for the postseason, right? You got to get aligned and get ready to go, because it's going to be, looks like your guys are facing the Yankees. And that's going to be, as you know, a big challenge considering the history.
Yeah, it's going to be huge. I was looking through the past couple times we've played them in the postseason, and it was really ugly. But we're going into it this time, I think, as an 100-win team. Hopefully that'll make a difference. Expectations low, hopes high.
All right, let's get to this week's tweets.
Sounds good. Kicking it off, we've got Hal Stort at DJ Hal Stort. With Felix Hernandez's career seemingly now over in Seattle, where do you see him landing, and will he become a bullpen piece rather than a starter?
Look, he's going to be 34 years old next spring, and there's a reason why the Mariners are saying goodbye at this point is he hasn't been very good, you know, this year. 1-7, 6.51 ERA. I hope, just me as a baseball fan, I kind of hope he steps aside, because seeing him in another uniform would be like seeing Joe Namath at the end of his career playing in a Rams uniform. It just doesn't look right. You know, if he wants to play and give it a shot, hey, more power to him. But remember, he's been living in Seattle, and, you know, why not finish your whole career, a whole career in which you played for one team?
Yeah, agreed. I don't really see it. Next, we've got Jeff Gergenti at Jeff Gergenti. After the hashtag Phillies fire Gabe Kapler, does he get a managerial job for 2020? I feel like he's a good fit for the Padres and could work well with A.J. Preller. What do you think?
And I would assume that he probably knows A.J. from his time working in front offices, maybe from when they were both in the Rangers organization. But the name I keep on hearing, this is total speculation at this point, is that of Farhan Zaidi, who's the head of baseball ops for the Giants. Gabe worked with him in the Dodgers front office. It'll be interesting to see if, in fact, Gabe's fired. And that is, generally speaking, the expectation around the industry, if the Giants could be a landing spot for him.
That could be a really interesting move. Be great to see him out on the West Coast. Next, we've got Triple Shy at BB_Ben29. The tribe looks stunned, but no one is suggesting that Tito might be gone. Outside of a managerial change, what offseason moves do you expect out of Cleveland?
You know, I started asking around a little bit about what the timing's going to be when they start to perhaps listen to offers for Francisco Lindor, because that's going to happen. He's going to be a free agent 2 years from now, and I don't think this will be the offseason when that happens. I think it's more likely, if the Indians aren't playing well next summer, that might pick up maybe a year from now. I think the big question this offseason, we talked about it this week a little bit on the podcast, what are they going to do with Corey Kluber, who has a contractual option for $17.5 million for 2020 after making just 7 starts this year?
To pivot the question a little bit, do you think they need to make any offseason moves?
I don't think they can make a lot of offseason moves, because I think, first off, we know they don't have a lot of payroll flexibility, and Lindor, as he climbs the arbitration ladder, is going to get a huge raise, and they're going to have to offset that.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be what they end up doing. As a Twins fan, you always kind of have to be wary of them, especially when they overtake your team for a whole day this year. Jeremy T at Jeremy Tiramini. My favorite Marty Brenneman fact is that he called Hank Aaron's then record tying home run in his first game. Buster, what's your favorite MLB player first game fact? Mine is Will Clark homering off of Nolan Ryan in his first at bat. And this is Jeremy's words, not mine. He thinks that Troy is too young to answer this.
Yeah, Troy, you probably have nothing to offer here, right?
I remember Jurickson Profar's first home run in his first at-bat.
Yeah, that one's going to go down in history. Everyone's going to remember that one.
Hey, he's going to be a postseason hero at the A's. Just you wait.
There you go. Well, and mine might see it as obscure, but Daniel Nava, in his first plate appearance in the major leagues, hit a grand slam on the first pitch that he saw. And if you know Daniel Nava's career path, he was like the team manager when he was in college. And then he got a chance to play in fall ball. And then he got stronger lifting weights. And eventually he works his way through this meandering journey to the big leagues, and he hits a grand slam on the first pitch he sees. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, since I'm just a little bit older than Troy, I will have to say my favorite is Eddie Rosario hit a home run in his first at-bat, and his whole family flew out from Puerto Rico. They were all in the stands cheering, so excited to see it. I mean, I don't know if Eddie Rosario will be our postseason hero per se, but I do have a little bit more context to that question.
Yeah, 100%, and certainly better perspective than Troy has.
Being a couple years older really just changes your view of the world. Lastly, we've got Justin White at jwhite85. Since today is our last Friday of Bleacher Tweets before the postseason, he wants to know about some of our on-the-record round-by-round predictions.
You know, Justin, here's the thing with my predictions. I don't like changing them as you go along. Sometimes, like, the SportsCenter producers will call you in mid-season and say, hey, as of today, who are your picks? I'm like, I don't want to do that because I just want to keep track of one set of picks. I will say that before the year started, I picked the Astros to beat the Braves in the World Series. I'm feeling good about that one. Like, I think that one's okay, so I'm sticking with that. And I know it might seem silly, but I just don't like trying to keep track of all the different picks, Rena, if that makes sense.
No, I get it, and it's a lot. It's a lot of rounds, a lot of teams. I will be changing my pick from before the season. I had also picked Houston and the Braves facing in the World Series. Yeah, before the season started. I did pretty good with my the regular season picks, but I'm not feeling so great about my postseason, so I'm actually going to change mine to Houston and Dodgers.
Wow. I see. Here's the thing, though. You sacrifice bragging rights if you wind up changing it and the Braves wind up winning it. You're going to feel like, oh, man, I wish I had still had the bragging rights.
Probably, yeah. But I already have kind of the bragging rights from the regular season, so I'll give it up for something I feel a little bit more confident about. And plus, I think a Houston-Dodgers rematch would be really, really fun to watch. Not saying that a Houston-Atlanta one wouldn't be, but that's something that I think is kind of been bubbling under the surface for the past couple years.
Well, and they clearly have been the two best teams, I think, this year with a little Yankees mixed in and just the Yankees fading a little bit toward the end and the Astros playing well. Rena, thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for today. My thanks to Carl, Boog, Rena, Bruce Bochy, Troy. But before we go, the last goodbye will be from my friend and colleague Matt Viscursion, who wrote a letter of tribute to Marty Brenneman. This from MLB.com.
All right, this is the Brenneman letter. We are ready to go in here and rolling.
Cool, here we go. Dear Marty, as you approach the end of your Hall of Fame run in the Reds radio booth, I wanted to get behind a microphone myself to tell you why you'll be so missed and what you've meant to me. In 1991, I started my play-by-play career in Class A Huntington, West Virginia, a place where the Reds have always been popular, as you know. But back then, in the afterglow of the previous season's World Series title, the Appalachians were decidedly Reds country. I arrived in Huntington having never heard a major league game outside of my native California, where I held the likes of Vin Scully, Jerry Coleman, and particularly Bill King in the highest regard. But it was on the very first time that I stumbled into you working with Joe Nuxall on a rainy April night on WLW that I knew, for me, you were the voice that would define the way a broadcast should sound. It was somewhere in between a story about an Elvis statue, a Hal Morris homer, and the best soil for a tomato garden that I knew I was hooked. Listening to Reds radio made me feel like I was a friend. And the longer I listened, the more I felt I was in on the gags and quips that became a part of the experience. It was like going to a Friars Club dinner with live BP on the other side of the curtain. Years later, as a rookie Brewers broadcaster, I disregarded the long-standing advice to never meet your heroes and decided to pop into your booth at Old Riverfront Stadium to say hello. You turned around and greeted me with a smile and a handshake.
I'm all right, you?
Yet all the while, I couldn't help but notice Nuxall fast asleep with his head propped up on the side of the wall. You asked me how I was handling the cold weather in Milwaukee, when on cue, Nuxie woke up to say, "Milwaukee, put another log on the fire," before immediately returning to the same sleeping position he'd been in a moment earlier. "Don't mind Joe," you said. "He doesn't get started until the middle innings." Throughout the years, I can say for certain that no veteran broadcaster was ever more gracious or downright fun to be around. It was your voice that put generations of Cincinnati fans to bed by stating simply, "This one belongs to the Reds." You had a pretty good run, Marty. Hank's 714th on your first day on the job.
Henry Aaron has just tied Babe Ruth's home run record.
Big Red Machine to the Nasty Boys, you were there for every big moment.
It's got to be the biggest thrill of your career.
It is, Marty. I'm so excited.
It's number 41-92.
the 1990 World Championship belongs to the Cincinnati Reds.
Junior has just knocked the door down to the 500 club.
You irritated fans from St. Louis to Chicago, and even let a few players know when you'd had enough with their infamous, "I was here when you got here and I'll be here after you're gone" line. I don't think you ever really knew how right you were about that. Because for those of us upon whom you've had an impact, you'll never really be gone. Thanks, Marty, for showing me how to do it. Matt.